Hi, and welcome to the Switch Natural podcast. My name is Andrea Dar, and on my journey to find non-toxic products, I've met some amazing people. People that are driven by their life experiences to create something new that can help others on their wellness journey. I'm sharing candid conversations so that you can be inspired too. Liz Cook is the founder of One Seed Perfume, which is a 100% all-natural perfume brand, which is actually really rare. Liz has been in the natural products industry for over 20 years, and she knows this stuff inside and out, all about what goes into making perfume, why traditional perfumes are harmful. I can't wait for you to hear her story and to learn some stuff along the way. Enjoy.
So for me personally, switching out fragrance from all of my products was one of the most impactful things that I've done in this journey in terms of feeling better. So I'm very happy to talk to you today since you're a professional in the fragrance space. I would love to know where your interest from natural perfume came from and maybe just a little bit about your history, your background, how you got into this.
Yeah, absolutely. So my background is actually quite varied, but I've been in the natural beauty space now for 21 years. So when I was, I've had an interest in natural health probably since I was 13. I grew up with brothers who were into natural bodybuilding, and they always had bodybuilding magazines, and they were into supplements. And so I was always very curious about that side of life. And so I used to read all those magazines and got very heavily into, you know, different diets and things in my teen years. And so nutrition was always a big interest of mine, as well as natural cosmetics, which really wasn't a thing in the 90s when I had started exploring that. Aromatherapy was, so I got a little bit into aromatherapy in my teens as well. And then when I was about 20, I started to dabble with cosmetic formulations. I guess I've always been a person that's very curious about the why behind everything. And so I would buy skin cream and I would look at the product, like I would go to Target versus a department store and look at the ingredient label and think, well, hang on a second, it's kind of the same product. Why am I paying $5 compared to $20? And I started to look at the ingredients list and break it down and find out, why am I paying so much for skincare and can I do it myself? And so that sort of led me down a pathway of starting to make my own products, which there were a lot of duds, let me tell you, a lot of things that grew bacteria, and, you know, lots of friends who were like, this is nice, but can I hand it back because it's not so good. So I did a lot of that in my late teens, early 20s. All the while I was studying at university, I was studying to be a nurse, and then I switched over and I was studying social science, majoring in child and family studies. And so I had a view to initially be a nurse and then get into child psychology, and I'm very much into thinking, thinking about thinking and understanding the reasons people do what they do and human behavior and all of that sort of stuff. So that's a really big passion of mine. But when I was 24, 25, and I was all the while working while I was at university to support myself, I was working as a photographer. I just kind of threw caution to the wind and thought, I'm actually not doing anything I really want to do, but I'd loved entrepreneurial stuff since I was a kid. And so I ended up deciding to open up my first store, which was, the concept was to sell ingredients so that people could make their own. Because even back then, you know, 47 now. So at 24, I still had this idea that we're all being sold marketing hype, and how do I get everybody to get into making their own or understanding what goes into their own products? So that was the original concept for that store.
That you were into ingredients so early on. That's
obviously
a passion of mine too. And you were on to it soon, because there's so much more that goes into beauty products in general, than what's inside, which is the most important thing. And that's the thing that everybody overlooks.
Well, and I think it's the thing we feel like we're not experts in. So we kind of leave it to the experts. And my opinion of this is that I think, yes, we do need to leave some things to the experts, but it doesn't mean that we can't take a deep dive and understand why things are done the way they're done. And it also often takes someone who's not an expert to kind of find the holes and the gaps. And sometimes the experts are so focused on doing things the way they've always been done that nobody's quizzing them as to why they're done that way. And so I have always been one to encourage people, as well as do it myself, find out why that ingredient is in that food, or, you know, what I remember listening to this story. This is a quick anecdote for you, but this will exactly describe the way that I think. Somebody said once that there was a recipe that had been passed down from one generation to the other for chicken soup. And in this recipe, it was take a whole chook, cut it in half, put it into the pot, you know, with all the water, the salt, whatever. And sometime down the generation, somebody said, "Mum, why do we have to cut the chicken in half?" And she said, "Well, that's the way it's always been done." And this kid was not happy with the way it's always been done. And as they looked back through the annals of history, and I don't know if this is a true story or you know, just a myth, but the only reason that chicken got cut in half was because they didn't have a big enough stock pot to put the whole chook. So just because it's done a certain way doesn't mean it should be done that way. And so, you know, my way of thinking and my way of encouraging people is always to say, dive deeper, find out why. And if you're not happy with the answer, then stamp your feet or make a different decision. So
it's great advice. And it also speaks to your entrepreneurial spirit. Makes a lot of sense knowing that about you.
Absolutely. And then
from a different angle.
Yeah, exactly. And so just back onto the story, essentially what happened is I ended up opening three stores. They became Australia's first natural beauty store. So this was back in 2001. So we ended up with three stores in South Australia. Nobody was doing what we were doing at the time. You could only buy natural beauty of sorts in a health food store. Not even pharmacy was doing natural beauty. And even
Absolutely.
Then you really
I
had
believe
to,
it. Yeah. Because even in 2014, when I started, there was hardly anything. I can't imagine
exactly.
In 2001. It's totally yeah,
there
different.
Was, and it was, it was a concept that kind of was blowing people's mind. Our customers would either go all in and say, "Oh my gosh, nobody's doing this. We need to do this." And they were, you know, really loyal, or they would say, "That I'm a bit suspicious. Like it's, you know, it sounds like, is it going to be full of bacteria because it's natural? Is it going to have lack efficacy?" So, you know, so there was a lot of, back then there was a lot of, there was very little curiosity, I'd say, and there's a lot of skepticism about natural. So I've been now in this space for nearly 22 years. I ended up selling that business in 2007 and then taking 18 months, let's say, off, but actually 3 months off. And then the rest of the time was spent developing products for the next brand, which is One Seed that I operate now. And the reason...
Just ingredients at that point in those stores, or you were selling products from wholesale?
Over that 7 year period, I realized that raw materials, I mean, that was a passion of mine, but it wasn't a passion of many people. So we started introducing brands. There were very few brands around, but we started introducing brands that we could find. Some of them we actually imported from even Germany. There was a brand called Santé & Lagona, which is a German makeup brand, one of the OG organic, actually, I think it was certified organic back then, makeup brands, and a few other products.
That must have been challenging to find these brands.
Massively wow. challenging. Yeah, massively challenging. So there was a very small range of brands, but it made me continue to take a deep dive, because we had a very strict criteria list for what we would and wouldn't allow. And the amount of brands that came to us saying, "Oh, this one will fit your criteria list." And, you know, you'd look down the list and the second ingredient would be sodium. And back then, this was the word of the hour, which was sodium lauryl sulfate. Everybody was then trying to avoid that one ingredient.
Yeah.
But it would have sodium lauryl sulfate, but in brackets, it would say coconut derived. And so even the industry was confused about what is natural and what is just, you know, squeeze it from a coconut, make it go through all kinds of processes and become essentially a chemical, and then pop it in a formula and say that it's natural. So there was a lot of that back then, a lot of...
I see this on labels where it'll say plant derived. And I'm like, but wait, this is that does not take into consideration, like you're saying, how it's made.
Correct. And a lot of ingredients start as natural ingredients. Yes, from coconut, you can derive a lot of different ingredients that can be used in skincare. But just because it's derived from nature doesn't mean that it is in any way natural at all. So you could take that coconut oil, let's say, and you could put it through a toxic chemical process of ethoxylation, and all of a sudden you have byproducts like 1,4-dioxane and all of these other ingredients, which now render this product, which no longer looks like coconut or operates like coconut, and you certainly wouldn't put it in your food or on your body if you knew what it was, but it no longer resembles coconut. So if you looked at the chemistry of that ingredient, it doesn't look like coconut anymore. So incredibly misleading. Yeah. And I see this even now when I go to buy, especially in hair care, I see this a lot, where you'd say where the label, and there's a big name brand, which I won't mention, but in its brand statement and also in its name, it includes the words, let's say something along the lines of natural. And so consumers are thinking that it's natural. When I look at the ingredient list, it lacks transparency, and it says things like 98.6% naturally derived. And so if I was a standard consumer that didn't have a background in this, I would think, oh, that's only, you know, that's less than 2% synthetic. But that's right. Not what it means at all. So right. Big passion area of mine. Yeah. So basically when I was running that company, we started to get people who'd made the switch to all natural products that they would buy from us. We were custom blending products for people on the spot as well. I started to get into product formulation in a bigger way. And then we started to see people coming in with their perfumes saying, I love this, you know, a YSL opium or whatever it is. Can you make a natural version? And I thought, oh my gosh, that's not my area of expertise at all. But it got my brain working. And we started working on perfume formulae. So when I sold that business, I just went headlong into researching natural perfumes and what was the difference between aromatherapy and perfumery and all of that stuff. So we launched in May 2009 with our first three perfumes for One Seed.
Which three were those?
That was Freedom, Courage, and Hope. Now, we've changed the formula for Hope since then, but Freedom has stayed exactly the same, and Courage has changed very, very slightly, but Freedom is still in our top three bestsellers, and it has been now for 14 years. So wow, that's pretty exciting. That's neat. Yeah.
That's really cool. Yeah. The perfumes smell amazing. And I got, you know, so interested in this brand because I've tried natural perfumes, and the smells of these, they smell so good. They don't smell like something that's totally different from perfume. I think that it's a easier transition than you would think. So
yeah, that's, and that's all. Really, thank you for saying that, because that's really a big part of what we do. I mean, there's absolutely a space for, you know, essential oil roll-ons and a beautiful little products that you can buy at a little farmer's market or boutique market and so on. There's a place for all of that. But for people who want to do a sideways trade with their perfume, there's very few brands that offer that. And that's really the space that we want to fill. Yeah.
You absolutely are filling it. And it's not the same to use a roll-on of essential oils. And I think that a lot of people assume that it would be, and then maybe they get disappointed with the results. It's not the same as something like you're offering. It's really wonderful.
Yeah. I mean, one of the biggest differences is that we work to perfume a perfume type of formula. So we're not looking at just basically taking ingredients that smell nice and putting them together and having a therapeutic benefit. Like, let's say you take patchouli and rose and sandalwood, and they all smell beautiful and they smell beautiful together. You would just put them in at, let's say, 1-3% in a jojoba oil base or something. And then you'd have a functional product, which is going to calm your nervous system and make you feel grounded, etc. But it isn't a perfume. So when we make perfume, there's a few things that we do different. One is that we don't just use essential oils. So essential oils, meaning the ones that you typically find, lavender, cedarwood, sandalwood, all of that stuff. Our palette is about 450 different ingredients. And that absolutely includes essential oils. It includes tinctures, that some of them that we make ourselves, like out of black tea leaves, out of seashells, out of rice. We also have like a basmati rice tincture in our Seeker perfume. So we get a bit creative with ingredients that we use. We're also using some attars, which are like a co-distillation in a big copper vat with sandalwood. This is how it's done in India. We're using absolutes, and we're also using some natural isolate. So a natural isolate, and this has really been a big game changer in the natural perfume space. A natural isolate is when you take, let's say, a whole ingredient like rose absolute, for example. Now, people often think that when you take rose, you've got one, basically one single ingredient. But in rose itself, there's about 400 natural chemicals that we know of that go in to make up the smell of rose. So when you're using a natural isolate, essentially what happens is that that whole ingredient gets put into a particular type of machine, which vibrates all the molecules apart, and you can isolate one particular natural chemical from that rose oil. So it could be something like citronellol or rose oxide or any number of other ingredients. When you extract that particular ingredient, you can then use that what's called a natural isolate to extend a particular note in a fragrance. So a really good example of this is vanillin, which can be derived from cloves, for example, or a bunch of other ingredients. Often it's derived from cloves, and vanillin smells like candy-ish, you know, mama cooking in the kitchen type of vanilla. And you can't really get that longevity from another type of natural ingredient, of natural whole ingredient that you can get from vanillin as a natural isolate. So that will then make a vanilla type of perfume really last for 7 to 8 hours, when if you just use the whole essential oil or the CO2 extract, you may only get 3 to 4 hours out of it. So we can help increase longevity by using some of those ingredients. So part of it is to do with
essential oils. If you put them on, they dissipate pretty quickly. I mean, you'll get a little bit of it out, but they go into the air and you don't smell them much longer.
Exactly. And part of that is to do with the person who's formulating, knowing how ingredients will lock together. So it's understanding the natural relationship between extracts, but also how does that extract evolve on somebody's skin, and how do you take 2 or 3 or 7 or 23 ingredients and lock them together in a way that produces this beautiful extended dry down and a little bit more of a story. So that's one of the really big differences too between essential oil roll-ons and naturals. And then we also age our perfumes as well. So we age our initial compound, which is the mixture of natural whole ingredients. We age that for 2 to 4 weeks. And then we add that to a base of organic ethanol or alcohol that comes from the an organic industry, sugarcane industry. And then that blend is macerated for 4 to 6 weeks as well. So the whole process takes about 10 weeks. It's very thorough. It's very thought through. It's very deliberate. And it requires aging in order to produce a beautiful product, much like the wine industry.
It's kind of leads to one of my other questions is why are companies not doing this? And maybe that's the reason, because so much effort and time and preparation goes into this process. Would you say, is there other reasons? Is it just a lot
There's a few reasons. Yeah, it's a lot cheaper. I mean, yes, absolutely. A lot of the bigger companies are no longer aging their products, or if they're aging them, they're aging them with machinery, and they may age them for, you know, a few days or a week, and then they're sending them out. Most of the products that you would find at your pharmacy or at your department store are mass market produced. So they might produce, you know, 1 million units, you know, a year or a couple of months or whatever, and they're going out to the world. So they don't have the time to let these things age. I think a perfume as a whole, aside from a lot of the niche brands that are coming up, but perfume as a whole has lost its artistic side and its craftsmanship. So we as consumers, we're so with the typical Western consumer mindset, we so drive demand for these products because we consume so many. So it actually means that at the other end, manufacturers don't take the time like they used to in the old days, you know, 100 years ago when perfumery was a craft. So it's absolutely about demand for products. So they're meeting, you know, demand quickly. It's also about cost. So the cost of producing a natural perfume is anywhere from 5 to 20 times the cost of a synthetic perfume. And when I say that, people often think, oh, but not my perfume, because, you know, I spend $400 on my, you know, my whatever it is. And we're so precious about our perfumes. But I have to drop a bombshell, Andrea, and tell you that the cost of producing any perfume, any synthetic perfume, whether you spend $20 on it or $400, is between $2 to $3 a bottle. $2 to $3. So if you're paying $400, chances are what you're paying for is mostly marketing, the name, the reputation, Obviously the cogs that turn the company, that's, you know, even we have to pay for that as well, you know, staff and overheads, etc. But that's a massive, massive, huge markup for a product that feels
massive.
Yeah. And we're so precious about our perfumes, and for good reason. But when you stop and think that you basically what you've got is $2 or $3 worth of ingredients that may not be well thought through in terms of their effect on your health and well-being, but you're forking out $400, it starts to make you think, where do I really want to put my money? What are my values? And am I happy to spend that money on something that may not even be taking care of me?
Yes, that's a great point. And I've gotten to this place where when I come across a brand that's so heavily marketed, especially now with social media, and you start to get flooded with ads, and it's almost a turn off for me immediately, because I know that's where most of the money is going. And you start to think, what's going into the quality of product? There's less to go for that if all the capital is being spent on the marketing.
Exactly. I told you I'll do deep dives into everything. I warned you.
I like it. I love it. You talked about aging. What does that mean exactly, to age it?
Yeah. Much like the wine industry, there's a lot of things that happen in the aging process that we don't govern. Like, you know, time governs that process. Some of it is unpredictable. So when a perfume sits there and you've got an amalgamation of ingredients, let's say for natural, it could be up to 25 ingredients. It might be anywhere from 6 to 25 ingredients. Those ingredients, as they sit there, they start to mesh together. And then as they're macerated in the alcohol, you also get an absorption into the alcohol. But what often happens is as those ingredients sit there, they can form new bonds. So if you have, one ingredient, let's say, let's for lack of a better explanation, let's say it looks like this from a chemistry point of view, and you have another one that looks like this. When you sit them together, you may end up having this one that locks with this, and then these arms blend with something else. And so you can produce effects in a perfume with the aging process that are unexpected and unpredictable as things lock and move together, which is a really beautiful thing. But also from a production point of view, we have to, I suppose, give that time before we ever make that fragrance commercial to know how these things are going to age and what are the after effects of aging. The other thing, so from a chemistry point of view, what is also happening is that you're getting all molecules are in motion. So even, you know, the table that I'm sitting at, all these molecules are in motion. So when you have essential oils, extracts, etc., and ethanol, everything is vibrating. As they sit there, they actually start to vibrate closer together until they're essentially rubbing up on each other. And in that process, what you get is a smoother kind of formula. So if you first smelt it when we made it, it would smell clunky, like walking down steps. But after the aging process, it's like going down a slide.
Sort of like how my soup will taste better 2 or 3 days later.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly right.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about the dangers, the concerns with traditional perfumes, and why you really should write that off?
Yeah. And I'm always really, I guess, careful not to tell people to write it off. I think everybody's in their own journey with all of this stuff. And fragrance is one of those things that we do. Once we're onto a fragrance, we feel it's such a personal thing. I think people have to untangle that in their own time, which is, I think, why we can be converted to everything else, natural and organic and, you know, chemical free. That's such a funny word, but we can convert everything else, and yet we still might wear our commercial perfume because it speaks to us on an emotional level because of the way that it actually hits our olfactory system. And we can talk about that later if you like. And to be honest, it's not really a complicated issue. I think the complication is more like when we're ready to make the switch or not. But there's some tangible, hardcore evidence about synthetic fragrance. And one of the big, big, big red light, massive flags is about hormone disruption. Now, these are not ideas that may or may not be proven. These are actually proven ideas. And a big culprit of this is phthalates. And I know there's now quite a few perfumes are saying that they're phthalate free. I haven't investigated what that means yet, because much like the whole BPA debate, when people started going, oh, well, now our plastic is BPA free, but now they're using BPS or some other bisphenol instead. I haven't investigated yet what a phthalate free fragrance actually is using instead of phthalates. But phthalates are a massive, massive culprit in the perfume space. A phthalate is essentially a liquid plastic, and phthalates are hormone disruptors. So what they actually do is they can go and mimic estrogen and affect receptor sites where estrogen should be. They can actually displace estrogen, cause an estrogen overload. And we're seeing the effects of phthalates in fragrance. And when I say fragrance, I mean across the board, everything from your laundry detergent through to candles, room sprays, personal perfumes, the whole thing. Phthalates are ubiquitous, especially in this industry. So phthalates have been known to cause many, many effects on our hormones, including precocious puberty, which is where girls at, you know, 8, 9, 10 are already going through puberty. And in my generation, it was like 12, 13 was the standard, but we've dropped, you know, back to 8, 9 kind of as a standard in one or two generations. That's too fast for it to not be environmental.
It's so absolutely scary. I read this book called Countdown, actually in the Switch Natural book club. We read it, and a big part of the author's work, Dr. Shanna Swan, is with phthalates, and it is,
yes,
it's mind-blowing. There's so much evidence with phthalates.
There's so much evidence. I think the thing is, when people are looking for evidence, the problem is when you come up with a let's say a questionable chemical. And the similar thing happened with smoking. I mean, it took 25 years from when they knew that cigarette smoke was causing cancer to 1980, when the World Health Organization actually said it was causing cancer. But we knew this from the 60s and from the 60s, in fact, from the 50s. So I don't rely on, okay, the data is now settled. I'm like, if there's smoke, there's probably fire. So I always do a deep dive there. But with phthalates,
I've even seen it happen in the shorter time that I've been looking at ingredients. You know, some of the ingredients I was flagging in the beginning, people weren't really worried about.
Yeah.
And now suddenly more and more studies come out. And so you really do want to err on the side of caution, because I haven't seen it go the other way. I haven't been warned. Yeah. And then it gets cleared. It always goes the other way.
It almost never gets cleared. Almost never, ever. I can't think of an issue that's been flagged in terms of chemistry, and then they've gone, oh no, false alarm, it's actually fine. Yeah, it's crazy. But phthalates is one of those things that, like, we're seeing now, and I was listening to a podcast about this the other day, and I can't remember the statistic, but we're seeing such a dramatic increase in especially male infertility and problems around the male reproductive system in one single generation. And I believe the drop is something like a 30% reduction in fertility in the last 25 years. So people are saying, oh, you know, it's genetic, la, la, la. But genetics don't work that fast. Genetics work over multiple generations, and you see a slide. Whereas when you see a massive drop like that, you have to start looking at environmental things. We know that phthalates being so ubiquitous, they're just everywhere, and they're in almost all the products we use. One being that most products we use are also scented, but phthalates are in so many things. But if you look at phthalate exposure on critical points in development, the most critical things for people to be aware of is when you're pregnant or trying to conceive, or when that child, especially that male child, is in puberty. These are the most critical windows for the impact of chemicals like phthalates and other endocrine disruptors to actually disrupt our well-being and our ability to reproduce well, or our ability to maintain a good homeostasis in terms of what our hormones are doing. So if people are thinking, I'm not sure that I'm ready to give up my phthalate, my products that might include phthalates, if nothing else, at least pull them out completely while you're pregnant, breastfeeding, and also when your kids, and I know this is a really hard one to do because they hit 11, 12, 13, and they're there with all the body sprays, you know, the
foot sprays. That's exactly what came to my mind as you were talking, is the body sprays. And the thing with phthalates and fragrance And I know we can talk about this more too, is that you're not going to see phthalate on an ingredient list for fragrance, no. because fragrance is hardly ever going to have an ingredient list. I mean,
that's right. And phthalates are often an additive in something else. So you will, on occasion, you'll see DEP listed. It'll just say DEP, but not usually. How usually a phthalate is inserted, a very common way a phthalate is inserted into a fragrance is that it becomes part of the ethanol. So somebody could just put on their label. Yeah. So phthalate, diethyl phthalate specifically is the most common additive to ethanol to render it denatured. So denaturing is basically where we take ethanol, which if you drank it, even if it's natural ethanol, it's you don't want to drink 99.7% alcohol because that will kill you and damage your liver, kidneys, etc. So in order to overcome that health problem, the alcohol needs to be denatured. So by law, you have to denature alcohol in order to sell it. So companies will often denature with diethyl phthalate. So what you'll see on a label is alcohol in brackets denat or denatured, or it may not even say anything. It may just say alcohol. Yeah, you see it all the time. So if it's a denatured alcohol, 99.999% of the time, it's going to include diethyl phthalate, but you will not see that on the label. So you're spot on when you say you're looking at the label, where is it? It's in there, but at up to 50% of the ingredients don't have to be listed when it comes to fragrance. There's massive
loopholes. Is there a way that they can denature the ethanol without
phthalates? Yeah, that's what we do. So with our perfumes, in fact, what we do is we buy in the 99.7% ethanol, and then that ethanol, by adding essential oils and natural extracts, is then denatured. Denaturing only means that denaturing also is called debittering. So when you're adding a debittering agent, basically what you're saying is if somebody picked that up and took a sip, they're going to spit it out because it's going to be so bitter. And I don't know if you've ever tried essential oils on your tongue, but they're super bitter. So if you add essential oils or natural extracts to an ethanol, you're not going to want to drink that. It's so strong and so bitter. So that still means that we are denaturing the ethanol, but we're not buying it in denatured. So if somebody was to buy in perfumer's alcohol, it's labeled perfumer's alcohol, that's always going to be denatured, almost always with diethyl phthalate.
So if someone were to see alcohol denate on an ingredient list, would you automatically cross it off?
Cross it off.
Okay.
Automatically. And there are some companies that are using natural extracts in their formula, but are still using denatured alcohol. So it, for those companies, my thought is they probably don't quite understand that there is a way to denature ethanol without using perfumer's alcohol and buying it in that way. I would almost, as a consumer, I would be going to that company, if you love them, and saying, hey, I'm so excited that you're using all natural extracts, but why are you using denatured ethanol? Because that probably has phthalate in it. Can you? And most companies, if they're really trying to do the right thing, will probably flag that themselves. And hopefully they'll go back to the drawing board and have a look at why they're using denatured ethanol. But it's always the case.
And the question to ask then is, if you wanted to take it a bit further, you would say, how is your ethanol denatured?
Absolutely. Yes.
Even if the product says phthalate free, they need to go to their supplier and figure out how the alcohol is being denatured and make sure that it's not being denatured with phthalate.
Exactly. Because they may not even be getting the right information. So keep in mind too, Andrea, there are no rules around what you can say on packaging. It seems mind-boggling, right? But I could literally come up with a product today and say that it has no carrots in it or whatever it is. It doesn't matter what it is. And I could still put carrots in it. Nobody's going to hold me to account for that. So when somebody says phthalate free, okay, they're saying phthalate free, but is there phthalate in the ingredients that they're buying in the raw materials, in the ethanol, etc.? They may not be adding phthalates, but are there phthalates, you know, behind the scenes, are there phthalates?
Yeah, that's an interesting point. Like, I wonder in the US, because I know like the FTC has certain rules around, or they can enforce it. Like, would companies be putting themselves at risk? I don't know if it's the same in Australia.
Absolutely.
Like, they actually could get in trouble
They could, but they don't. Right. There's so many brands and there is really no governing body that's going around and randomly testing things.
Right.
So
right.
It really comes up. It comes down to consumer awareness, and a consumer might say, hang on, this is supposed to have rose oil and I can't smell rose. Like it's a roses perfume or whatever it is. That's probably not a good example. But let's say when it's something that you buy specifically for that particular effect, whether it's phthalate free or it contains 24 karat gold flakes to help with aging or something, it really takes a consumer to go to consumer and business affairs and flag this product and say, we've lab tested it, or I've felt it, or whatever, and I'm sure that it doesn't have XYZ. So until that happens, really products can get away with marketing things however they want. And I know in Australia, for example, that the laws around the size of the font are way more strict than they are to do with the ingredients that you can and can't use in a formula.
You know, it reminds me of the talc asbestos issue.
Yeah.
You know, powders are saying they're asbestos-free talc, but you can't ensure that talc is asbestos-free because it depends on the lot and the particular. Correct. Every product is going to be different. And so, yeah, it's confusing, but it's very interesting to learn about this alcohol denat. And I think that's something that is a good, just solid tip for people to look for that. So I'm happy to offer that. Thank you for sharing it.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I guess before we move away from that, are there any other, you know, we really talked about focused on phthalates. Is there something else that you think is important for people to know that's in a lot of perfume or most perfume?
Yeah, I think for the people who follow what you do, which is so, so valuable, I think the two biggest things to be aware of is the effect that fragrance can have on your hormones and phthalates. Yes, there's other endocrine disruptors as well, like UV filters and so on, and they often will be listed. Some of the colors that are included may be listed, and they can also be endocrine disruptors. So there's multiple endocrine disruptors other than phthalates. So if nothing else, I would suggest that consumers look for a product that's going to have a minimum of endocrine disruptors in them. There's lots of data these days online, and I know we include a few references and links and so on in our journal on our website as well. So yes, just be aware of the effect on your hormones. And so if you are somebody who's trying to get pregnant or has had hormonal difficulties over the years or has hormonal cancers in your family, that would be something I would be saying, hey, it's probably a good idea to look for a product that is 100% natural, and then you know you're not going to be getting any endocrine disruption. The other thing to be aware of is fragrance. So even if a product says that it uses natural, unless it says it's 100% natural, then what's being used in that product is going to include synthetics, absolutely. So the way that you can tell is that you'll see the term fragrance in, it'll just say fragrance, basically. It won't say, you know, fragrance including these 7 extracts or whatever. It's just going to say fragrance. Now, some natural perfume brands are still using the term fragrance and not disclosing their ingredients, and they are allowed to do that by law. More and more, we're slowly seeing brands come out and have a transparency policy, which is really, really good. But if you're looking to avoid synthetics and things that will interfere with your hormones and your well-being generally overall, then you will want to avoid things that have those endocrine disrupting chemicals like the phthalates, the denatured alcohol, the UV filters, as well as anything that just says fragrance and doesn't actually disclose what exactly is in that product. That's what I would say.
Awesome. That's great advice. I think especially with fragrance, transparency is so important. It's just not one of the things that you can gloss over because so much can be in there. Actually getting to know the brand and who's behind it and what's going on behind the scenes is just so important with fragrance. Another thing that comes up from time to time is some people will say not all natural ingredients are safe.
Yeah.
I'd love to know what you think about that, particularly with fragrance. I mean, when I think about, there's a few exceptions, for example, in makeup, you know, certain synthetics actually might be safer than natural. Mm-hmm. And then you'll hear, and then in terms of fragrances and essential oils, you'll hear that lavender is an endocrine disruptor.
Yeah. And I think this is an important conversation as well, because I think anybody who says everything that we sell is perfectly safe for everybody, it doesn't matter if it's oats, it's not even safe for everybody. So one of the things I would say is we can all be susceptible to allergies and intolerances to natural ingredients. And I think most of us have experienced that. We all either have a food allergy or a food intolerance and so on. And that could be a whole organic something or rather, and we can still have an intolerance or a reaction or get hives from it. So just because something's natural doesn't mean it's innocuous. And to that end, I would say that if you go to a herbalist or a naturopath, you know that the way they often help your body come back into homeostasis or have a net benefit on your hormones to bring your hormones back around to normal is by using herbs. So herbs are super, super potent and powerful. When you're talking about something like lavender, and I know there's been research on and off, I'm not discounting the research at all, but I often look at who's driving this research, because often it seems like when certain chemicals are in the media and there's scrutiny around certain chemicals, we get almost like a reaction from industry saying, oh, but rose oil can cause skin reactions and lavender can cause endocrine disruption. So it's like, it's almost like backlash. So I take it a little bit with a grain of salt, though I think there is some truth to it. Like there are absolutely natural extracts that can affect your hormones. And that's only a problem if you're somebody who's experiencing, let's say, PCOS or endometriosis or whatever, and it's out of control and you're trying to minimize your exposure to everything. I would say for somebody like that, get rid of every scented everything in your life and try to bring your body back to a natural homeostasis without interference, either from synthetics or naturals, and just go with the herbal extracts, the supplements, the dietary stuff that your naturopath would say, for example, until you get better. And if you're pregnant, there are certain ingredients that it can include lavender. There's data to say lavender doesn't have an impact. There's data to say it does. I know when I was first looking at aromatherapy, lavender was one of those ones we suggested people should use during pregnancy. And like the data comes in and out and it gains and loses fashionability. But absolutely things like clove and cardamom and clary sage, things that are more herbal in nature, tend to have what we call emmenagogue properties. So they can bring on a woman's period, for example. They can try to balance out hormones to where your hormones are right for your body. And you don't want to be doing that when you're pregnant or breastfeeding. So there are many reasons why people might not want to use essential oils at certain times of their life. Also, if you are someone who has multiple chemical sensitivity, and this is where your body's already reached the tipping point and it's so far gone and so reactive to everything that even naturals are untenable for somebody in that situation. So again, just because it's natural doesn't mean it's going to be beneficial for your body. So that's what I'd say about naturals. But on the other hand, if you're looking at exposure to synthetic, from a fragrance point of view, synthetic fragrances are always going to have a much more marked effect on your body and on your well-being in a negative way than any natural perfume. So generally what we see, if we see a natural perfume that somebody has a reaction to, and for our brand, we've been around for 14 years, we've had less than a dozen reactions and we document them all. So what we've seen is skin allergies. We've never seen headaches, migraines, you know, fatigue, brain fog, all of the other things that you can get.
That's such an important point because there's so much data, like you mentioned before, on phthalates and these things, but fragrance is one of those. I can just, if I knew nothing and all I did was follow the way that I felt, it's night and day from using a fragrance, synthetically fragranced product to using nothing or a naturally fragranced product. I mean, I can feel the difference. I don't even need the data. And I think that that just speaks volumes. And plus, like, I, you know, one of the things with naturals that came to mind is just the time, the record of time that we've had of experience of thousands of years of people using them. And then just your experience, 14 years and having so few reactions. Then compared to the headache that I get immediately when I smell synthetic fragrance, there's like a common sense element to this too.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, when you look at the data and you see that about 33% of us are having marked obvious reactions to synthetic perfume. Like you say, if you knew nothing else, you know that when you walk through a department store, or you're having coffee with your friend who's just doused themselves in their favorite synthetic perfume, you feel brain foggy, you feel fatigued, your heart races, you get anxiety, your nose hurts, you taste metal. Like, all of these effects they're anecdotal, but they're real. So whether you know the data or not, 33% of us are reporting having negative experiences around synthetic fragrance, to the point where in the UK, synthetic fragrance reaction has actually become a legal disability. You can actually claim a disability pension. I don't know all the ins and outs of that one, but it's actually a diagnosable condition now. So people have been known to have to leave their workplace because people in that workplace are using, you know, either diffusers, or they've got plug-in diffusers, or people come doused in perfume. And certain body types, or you might be on your way to multiple chemical sensitivity, or you might just have a naturally gentler disposition and sensitivity with perfumes. For some people, that is absolutely a debilitating condition. And it's not a joke. You know, often people who suffer from this are embarrassed because they kind of feel like they're weak, or nobody else has this. It's embarrassing. And it's like cigarette smoke.
Yeah, I think the number is probably actually higher, because, and especially if someone's listening and they haven't really, they're just getting into this world or journey, until you are separated from it, you don't realize how strong it is. So I think that a lot of the people that are just not having reactions haven't taken a step back yet. And once you do, you are just blown away.
Yeah. And I think a really good test for that, Andrea, is for people to put away, if they're not sure, if it's like, if you've got symptoms like brain fog, fatigue, even if you're feeling like you're kind of hungover all the time, you've got anxiety and you're trying all the things and nothing's working, to see if synthetic fragrance in all of its forms is making a difference, the best thing people can do is to take every single scented product in their home, from laundry powder to candles, perfumes, everything, put it in a box, throw it in your shed or away from your house for a month. Go about life as normal. Don't use anything synthetic, and then bring it all back, put it all back in its place, start using it as you did a month ago, and journal your reactions. Do you feel any different than what you did a month ago? And I think for 90% of people, as you say, they probably aren't putting two and two together and working out that synthetic fragrance is one of the things that's having a major impact on them. But after doing that little test, a lot of people find that it makes the biggest difference. And they say they can't go back. We hear it all the time. People who make the switch, get rid of all the synthetics, and then maybe they try again their favorite perfume, or they're around their friend for coffee and she's wearing XYZ perfume, and they're thinking, I can't breathe. I feel anxious. Yeah. I can't go back.
We hear it all the time. And it's been my experience. And I think almost everyone that's done this feels the same. It's just, we're so used to it because even baby products are so heavily fragranced. So our entire life we've been in this sort of fragranced
atmosphere. Cloud. It's a cloud of fragrance that surrounds us all the time. And we don't even know what normal feels like anymore. You know, so keep in mind, because you feel a certain way and that's your normal, doesn't mean that's how you should be feeling. So just because something's common doesn't mean it's normal.
That's a good point. It's like we've lost our sense of smell. And once you get it back, you're like, wow. I mean, I can't
different
even have
world.
A trash bag in my house. I can't remember why, but I couldn't get the unscented trash bag. And I had to use one that was scented. I think we were traveling and it was so overwhelming. Yeah. It's just a trash bag.
Yeah. And one of the things I want to mention quickly here too is, you know, mental health issues are absolutely off the scale now. About 25% of us will suffer from anxiety or depression at some point in our lives. And obviously with COVID and everything, those numbers have really skyrocketed from where they were before. I'm a functional nutritionist as well by trade. And this is one of my areas that I love to explore. And I have a lot of clients with mental health issues. But one of the things I would say is for people who are struggling in that particular area to not overlook the synthetics in your world, whether it be fragrance or any number of other chemicals like food additives and so on. Don't overlook that as a possible way to help lift the burden on your body. There's lots of articles and data around how synthetics burden our body so much and interfere with all level of hormones, not just sexual hormones, but hormones that also affect, like, you know, serotonin, dopamine, and all of the feel-good chemicals as well. So that would be something I'd like to flag here for people in that situation to have a deeper look into their whole lifestyle and see what they can remove, which might help.
That's a great point. And like you said, it's another burden on your body that's pushing you over the limit. And I think it's so easy to overlook. So that's a really great point. I love that you have such a thorough blog with a bunch of posts on things. And something that I read you talked about that I think is important is adjusting your expectations when you're switching to natural products and fragrance. Would you spend some time expanding on that a little bit for everybody? I think it can be really helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the reason I wrote that article is because I think we, as consumers these days, we have very, very high expectations of the products that we choose. So most of us go into purchasing anything with, you know, the highest expectations. It's got to have XYZ, it can't fail, it can't falter. It also must meet the same standard or whatever of the thing I bought previously. And that's all okay. And the world is so big now with so many products, we can be fussy about what we choose. I think what happens though with naturals in a lot of things, but I would also even say, let's have a look at a bag of chips. So if you go to buy a packet of potato chips and it's artificially flavored and flavor enhanced and your taste buds are exploding and it satisfies so many needs in your body. If you compare a bag of potato chips to a tray of whole roasted organic potatoes, it's not the same flavor sensation. You don't get the same level of, you know, hits of chemistry on your body. And yet if we went in and expected a bowl of roast potatoes to taste the same as a bag of potato chips with all of these artificial interferences, we know that would be an unfair expectation. So often what happens is let's talk specifically in terms of perfume. If I've been using a well-known perfume brand, which has a reputation for being long-lasting, and every time I wear it, my friends are like, oh, you're wearing that perfume again. That always smells like you. That's your signature scent, blah, blah, blah. So we go to use this perfume. It's big, it's ballsy. It lasts me for 24 hours. I put it on when I go out in the morning after, I can still smell it and I'm still remembering the night before. So this is how we have come to know fragrance. Now, when we make the switch, what we're often expecting is the same exact effect, but using natural ingredients. But by their very nature, the ingredients don't have the same impact on the airspace. They will naturally break down in the environment. They will wear closer to the skin. There's a whole bunch of characteristics of natural ingredients that aren't the same characteristics of synthetic. But a lot of people think, I'm happy to make the switch as long as I compromise on absolutely nothing. It has to have the same level of performance. It has to still have scent throw so that the hot guy on the other side of the room can smell me as they're looking at me 12 feet away. So to go into wanting to make the switch, but saying I'll make the switch, but I won't compromise on anything, I think is a philosophy that's a little bit full of holes. Because in any, let's say if you want to do teeth whitening, so you could go in and get a teeth bleaching kit and you could whiten your teeth in an hour and go out with white teeth. But if you wanted to do that naturally, it requires a little bit of, it's a process, right? It's going to take a few weeks. It's going to take a month. You're going to see gradual changes. You're not going to end up with bleachy white celebrity teeth. So I think that's where I really wanted to get people to start thinking, is about what are the things that you're happy to compromise on and what are the things that you're not. While I believe that one seed is doing well in being a sideways switch, so that if you're switching from a well-known, beautiful brand that you love and have loved for a decade, and you want to switch to naturals, you don't feel like you're trading down. You feel like you're trading sideways. But at the same time, you're not going to get the longevity that you get from synthetic. So you're not going to get 12 hours out of a natural perfume. You're not going to necessarily smell it on your clothes the next day. The color is going to be different.
On the airspace of somebody next to you. You
don't 100%. Thank God it's not the same. That's right. I mean, how many times have you been in an elevator and you're like, when was that person in here? Because I can still smell it. So the natural perfumes, it's really about helping people to understand that these are the performance characteristics of natural perfumes. So you may need to compromise your sense of what's important to you. If it's important that your scent throw goes 12 feet, well, do you need to lower your expectations? Because you know, generally with natural perfume, it's your personal space that's filled with natural perfume. It's me to maybe 3 feet away at best. So this is what I'm talking about when I say adjusting your expectations when you're making the switch.
I think that's great. And what I love about it too is I can do one spritz if I don't want anybody else to smell it but me. If I want it to be stronger, you can kind of layer it, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you can also put it in your hair. I mean, if I'm going out and I want people to smell me, I will wear it on my pulse points because you obviously get heat radiating. And so you get a natural, beautiful scent throw. But if I want it to radiate further, I'll put a little spritz in my hair. So number one, you have heat radiating. Number two, as you're moving, you get a little bit of a waft. So there are absolutely ways to increase it, but you're not going to throw 12 feet across the room. And honestly, like you, I say, thank God for that. I don't want to smell you from 12 feet. If I want to smell you, I'll come in and I'll give you a hug. Otherwise, don't let me smell you.
And reapplying, I mean, especially with something as easy that's a spray it really is no big deal. I think we just get, like you said, used to it being a certain way. It kind of reminds me too of like what people refer to as fake food or really processed food completely chemically engineered to make you crave them. Whereas like a whole a meal that's made of whole delicious food, you're not going to have that crazy craving. Like if you're a slave to it. Yeah. It's just these.
And I would say, absolutely. And I would say one of the really good examples here is deodorant. How many people say, I've tried natural deodorant. It didn't work. I've gone back to my Rexona, and there's a reason that it works differently. We're not blocking our pores. We're actually letting our skin breathe and we're letting our lymphatic system drain and all of that stuff. But there's a compromise. You have to expect that you're going to have to reapply. You can't go 12 hours with a natural roll-on during the morning and then go to Pilates at night and think you're not going to smell. You are. But the compromise is not on your wellness then. The compromise is, I know it doesn't perform to the same standard. I understand why. Therefore, I just need to put it in my bag and apply every 6 hours. But it's deciding what things are you prepared to compromise on and what are you not prepared to compromise on.
I think that's such a good point. I love the way you explained it. And I think it goes just for the lifestyle in general. And that's why I'm always encouraging people to just take small steps because it's so much more manageable. And you realize it sounds like a big concession, but it's really not. It's just, we've gotten accustomed to it the opposite way. And so I love that message. I think that's really great. In the very beginning, you talked about why we get attached to like certain smells, the feelings that they evoke. And I know that a lot of thought goes into how you make your blends. Do you want to talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, one of my pet areas. I actually gave a lecture recently to a marketing agency just on this topic, and I could talk about it for hours, let me tell you. Basically, it comes back to how our bodies are organized. When we smell, we are actually having an impact on, so our olfactory system, which starts in our nose, connects to the region of our brain that's connected to emotion and memory, but also behavior. So we are actually conditioned from, I suppose one of the things to know is our sense of smell exists from birth. So the way that we understand the world is so ingrained in us as an instinct that we sometimes forget it even exists, and we forget that it's a driver of our behavior and our moods, etc. But from birth, we're conditioned. We know the smell of our mothers because this data just blows my mind. I wish I could do a research project on this, but the smells that our bodies are bathed in amniotic fluid that actually smells like our mother's skin microbiome. Can you believe that? So that amniotic fluid, it's amazing.
Yeah.
So that's why when a baby comes out, it actually instinctively goes towards its mother. It knows the smell. So we're conditioned from birth to be driven by smell, to be driven to places of safety by smell, and to retract from places that are unsafe because of our sense of smell. Like if we smell rotting food and it makes us, you know, retract, like you open the carton of milk and it's sour, or you smell smoke and you think, where's the danger? But the same thing happens with positive memories and things that happen in our life. Everything tends to be linked to our sense of smell because of the way that smell is processed in our brain. So if your mother wore Chanel No. 5, for example, and she was kind and caring and nurturing, almost guarantee you that you're going to have this unexplainable, virtually visceral reaction to Chanel No. 5, because to you it feels like nurture and comfort and all of the beautiful things. So if I say to somebody, the perfume that you're wearing that your mother used to wear is actually full of chemistry that's affecting your well-being in a negative way, they're going to be super defensive, because to them, that smell is all about nurture, and there's no way that it could be not good for them. So we become very, very attached to the things that we smell that have relationship to something positive in our world. And this is why people find it often hard to make the switch. And we often choose perfumes based on times of our life. It could be a graduation, or it's a wedding, or it's a new baby, or it's something. So we make ourselves really connected to emotion by scent, but also because of the way that scent is processed in our body, it drives our sense of emotion, our sense of connection, our memory, but also our behavior. So slightly offside from this emotional memory center of our brain is our behavior center. So when we smell something, it makes us feel a certain way. It also makes us impulsively behave a certain way. So when you understand the physiological mechanisms behind smell, you understand why people get super, super attached to things that smell a certain way. It also tells you why somebody will love, let's use a case in point, Chanel No. 5. Maybe your mother was a horrible woman and she was super strict and you didn't feel loved by her. You're not going to love that smell. So the same smell can have an opposite visceral instinctive reaction on two different bodies because of the way we relate to the fragrance.
Just knowing that, I think, can make people a little bit more open to switching once you kind of understand why you feel so attached.
Yeah, it's worthwhile unpacking, absolutely. But having said that, those memories are very hard to switch off. And we do develop kind of a catalog of scent in our brain. How many times have you been walking somewhere and you stop and you think, oh my gosh, this is me when I was 7 and I was at my grandfather's farm, or I was in this bookshop? Like memories that just fly out of our catalog like that. So we're so emotionally connected. And that's one of the reasons too that I think when I develop a formula for a new perfume, I'm so driven by the emotion behind that. So all of our perfumes are really like a story that connects to emotion. And we do get that feedback from customers all the time that it's not just, oh, I like the smell of hope or seeker or whatever. It does something to them on an emotional level for a lot of people. A lot of that is connected to the ingredients that we use that have beautiful connotations, like the use of vanilla, which often makes people feel safe and nurtured and secure. Some of them are aromatherapeutic benefits, like, for example, if we were to use sandalwood, and we know that that will decrease heart rate and respiratory rate, etc. So it can actually physiologically make you feel calmer, more subdued, more connected. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And then we name them accordingly as well. So when you wear a perfume like Dreamer, not only is it formulated to kind of feel wistful, but also with a word like Dreamer, people often relate to the poetry behind that as well. So a lot of thought goes into the naming and the formulations. Absolutely.
It's an art form all around.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And very deliberate.
Wonderful. You've given so many tips throughout this conversation. My last question for you is going to be tips for someone trying to switch to natural perfume. You've offered so much already. Is there anything else that you would want to add?
Yeah, I would say, I would say just know what you know, but don't feel like you have to go the whole switch. And this would be for everything. You don't have to throw out the baby with the bathwater, so to speak. But I think my tips for if you're ready to make the switch and you're saying, okay, I'm just ready to get rid of everything, or I'm going to slowly get rid of everything and introduce natural perfume. The things you want to look out for is clear statements by the company that you're wanting to go with. So statements around what they use, what they don't use. Are they 100% natural? Are they committed to the process? Whatever the thing, your values are, sustainability, whatever it is. But if it's natural, that brand should say 100% natural, or it might say 86.7% natural. But you want to look for transparency statements, first of all. Secondly, know that there are some things that don't exist in nature. And this is a little bit harder because people aren't necessarily going to know. But, you know, I commonly we have people saying, you know, can you make us a perfume that smells like peonies? But peonies, the smell of peonies might be beautiful, but you can't find that in a natural extract. So sometimes it's just knowing what is actually marketing, and like it might just be marketing words. There's a big difference between notes and ingredients. So that's a second thing to know, notes versus ingredients. And we've got some articles about that if people want to dig deeper.
I get that a lot. People will say, they will list me the notes and it's not actually ingredients. It's just the notes.
Exactly. Notes is like poetry. So notes is like, you know, if I can tell you a beautiful story about something, but then you go back to the facts and it might be slightly different. So notes is simply marketing terminology. It's things that you might detect in the smell, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's the ingredients. So you need to know the difference. So you really want to look at the ingredients panel. The third thing I would say is that if the whole range of perfumes is completely clear or is unnatural colors like bright pink, for example, or bright blue, then I would look very carefully if they're saying it's natural. And most likely what you'll get these days is people saying clean, and clean has kind of become interchangeable for natural, but it's not the same thing. So that's really important to know. Natural perfume will have a great variety in the color, and if the fragrances are clear, all of them are clear, then you can know that they're not using all natural ingredients, because naturals always have, isolates won't always have, but 90% of naturals will have deep intense color like reds, yellows, even browns. Occasionally you'll find a green, and there's only like two blue ingredients that exist in nature for okay. natural perfume. Yeah. Mm. But if it's bright pink, if you've got a bright pink and a bright blue and a bright whatever, and they're all kind of like fluorescent color, or they're all clear, then I would do a little bit more deep diving, but I'd suggest that would be a brand to avoid. And lastly, just look for terminology that's trying to deter you from transparency. So if we're just using words like clean, sustainable, vegan, and vegan is a really big one because people think that vegan means from plants, but it doesn't. So just be aware of the way that that products are marketed. And I would almost ignore the marketing and I'd go straight to brand statements, transparency statements, and ingredient lists. That would be my quick tips.
Those are great. I love all of those. Very, very helpful. Good to know about the clear. That's not one I would have picked up on. This has been so much fun, Liz. I've learned.
It has.
Thank you so much for being open and taking the time to talk to me today. I really enjoyed this a lot.
That's my pleasure. And I love the work you're doing, Andrea. And I'm so glad there's somebody like you who's deep diving for people and, you know, uncovering stuff and isn't prepared to stop at what does the label say. And I just commend you for everything you're doing. I wish you massive, massive success and growth in what you're doing. Thank you. You're just going to need a bigger team to keep doing all the research.
So nice. Thank you. That means a lot.
My pleasure. My pleasure.